Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. And also, we're going to be doing one of your requests. You guys have been leaving us ratings and comments on iTunes requesting books. Our request this week is from C-Sash. It's The Adventure Zone. Here There Be Gerblins. We're going to talk about that at the end of the show. If you'd like to request a book, again, just leave it in the ratings and comments on iTunes, and we will get to it. We love checking out whatever you guys want to ask. It's all good. But let's get into the new stuff first. Rogues number one from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson. Art by Leo Max. This is our good friend Joshua Williamson trying out the black label format for a tale of old man Captain Cold. As he goes on one last score along
Cold
with
Leo Man Max. Snart.
Cold Man. Oh, that's good. What did you think? What did you guys think about this? I know you're not quite as into the Flash side of the universe, but did this work for you?
I really think so. This really, I mean, the art's unbelievable, but this really had this kind of like Watchmen feel about it. I was really impressed with this. It feels epic. I'm glad that it's on the black label and can kind of get as dark as this story feels like it wants to get. I'm very excited about this. This is a fantastic first issue.
Yeah, I like that it pushes through a lot of the Rogue stuff we've seen before, that like people like Geoff Johns have really sort of built that pyramid in worship of them, and pushes through into like this whole new type of story that I was really excited about. But I really want to highlight the art. It has this sort of almost like classic... trying to like sort of the wash on it is a little bit old, but very expressive faces. It feels less superhero-y, sort of a step out of that. Really like it.
Cool. I'm going to say the art to me, and this is going to sound derisive, but I really don't mean it as such. It's like elevated Mad Magazine. You know what I mean?
Wow. Okay.
Like, it's kind of goofy looking, but a little more polished than that. And it's very fun. I had a good time reading this book. I like this take on the Rogues. There's such sad sacks in this issue that it comes off very fun. And the heist that they're pulling off, without getting into any spoilers, is very fun as well and gets me excited for the second issue. So I think this is a great start, and particularly when a lot of the black label stuff does go very dark and very serious, to have something that's a little lighter, a little more fun, I was super into.
The fact that it is kind of like older, you know, we've seen like kind of like, you know, old Wolverine or these older things, but this is done in a way that is different, and kind of there's a freshness to this. Even though we've kind of seen something like this, it still feels new and fresh, which is impressive.
We have Demons, number one, from Dark Horse Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Greg Capullo. As you can probably tell from the team, this is a big reuniting of the team behind one of the most lauded Batman runs of all time. Here with an original property, about a girl who is thrust into the middle of a battle between good and evil that slowly unfolds over the course of the first issue. Obviously, we love the run on Batman, but how do you think this worked with an original property that doesn't have bats or a lot of men, to be honest?
This is bananas good. This was very enjoyable. Hell of a first issue. I love even the kind of setup preamble thing we get here. Very, very impressed with this. Can't say enough amazing stuff about the art. This is another unbelievable first issue.
Yeah, just I feel like you've been using the term bananas good a lot on the podcast lately, and I just want to rank it in like what that means. Does that mean like great, or is it like, is this like a Runtz flavor profile where there's bananas?
I do love
cherries.
Runtz. And thank you
I
for
know you love
that.
Runtz because Runtz is a candy.
And also the banana flavored Runtz is the best flavor. So that's when I say bananas good, I mean it's really excellent. It's an high level tier of fantastic.
Do you also
rate
bananas that way? Do you like eat a banana and say this banana is bananas good?
No, no, I don't.
This banana is oranges adequate.
Confusing system. Stay away from Pete in the grocery store, and I mean that for a number of reasons. Yeah. Because I assumed that you didn't mean actual bananas, but banana Runtz really hits the mark, is what you mean. And I just want to give people that sort of visual lexicon.
That. Yeah.
As for this comic, this was, I feel like the opening page of text really set the tone. This feels unlike a lot of other Scott Snyder books. It almost feels like an early Rick Remender book. Oh, and the Greg Capullo art feels almost like an updated Rob Liefeld. Am I crazy?
What? Like Greg Capullo was a big 90s guy, like 90s, 2000s guy. And this feels like a throwback to that, where it's like it's something that could have come out the same time as Spawn. And I don't think I would have blinked, you know?
Exactly. Like, which Greg Capullo worked a lot on. But with the reveal of the Gus character sort of late in the issue, I was like, this is a Rob Liefeld panel. And Pete, you seem to be so rattled, you knocked your mic over. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm just very excited. Well, it's weird. You guys are throwing a lot of very specific things, and I don't want people to, if they have bad kind of like memories of those projects, to not latch onto this, because it's its own thing and very good. You guys are trying to compliment it. I just, you know, when you say Reifeld, I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know, if, you know what I mean? But I think this is extraordinary artwork and is really fun character wise and even the small details of the weird penis sculptures. I mean, everything is just really well done.
Weird highlight, especially covering from P. LePage. I guess I would call this Runtz-tastic.
Moving on to Wolverine patch number one from Marvel, written by Larry Hama, art by Andrea DeVito. I'm going to just throw it out here, the most important comic book of the week, particularly if you are having issues with your Wolverine. You're going to want to install this Wolverine patch immediately, okay? Okay. Pete, go ahead. Talk about what you liked about this book.
All right. First off, the legendary Larry Hama is on this. So this is number one for the ages. One of my favorite kind of Wolverines here is Wolverine Patch. You know, we don't, you know, usually we get kind of an adventure in the bar first, but I am just excited and blown away. This is just like my inner geek child losing its mind. The fact that we're getting Patch Wolverine right now, written by Larry Hama, is just unfucking believable. And it delivers. This is fantastic. What a week for comics. What a time to be alive.
Would you consider, I mean, first off, let me just say, this is a Pete stack. There's so many books in this stack
Ghost Cage yet.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to Ghost Cage. There's like three other books in here. Venom, amongst them, I'm like, geez, our Pete's taking the wheel here. For this patch, would you consider this more of like a nicotine patch or like a Weeblos patch?
Come on, man. I mean, this is a Zeppelin all the way across your fucking jean jacket patch, bro. This is fucking real deal.
All across the back. Yeah. This is like classic. If you're not, like Alex said earlier, if your flavor of Wolverine is not life and death, many lives and deaths, like this is what you want. Because this is like over the plate, classic Wolverine.
Yeah.
Spotting Soviet planes from the sky, fallen and messing up his body in a way that he's like, bones don't break. And I was like, wow, bones don't break. Is he just throwing his joints out all over the
place? Yeah, that never occurred to me. I guess his muscles rip and stuff. He could just be a loose bag of bones just rattling around in there for a while.
Yeah. You know?
Reading this
book, you think some of his cartilage is coated in adamantium?
They slipped a little bit when they were coating his bones, and like got like a
he
little
heals.
Bit
what
of
the
his
fuck
ligaments.
Is your problem, guys?
Does he? I'm not familiar with this Wolverine character.
Oh my god,
what about his teeth asking for a friend?
I read this book and I was like, who is this book for? And then I thought a minute later, oh, for Pete,
yeah.
So there you go. Ghost Gage.
You guys didn't, you're not having a great time with this?
This is.
Yeah, it's good. It's fine.
Here's the thing. This is a good job from the writing and art team. Exactly what I'd expect from this book. So they delivered on that. But I feel like comics have moved on and I'm okay with it.
Okay, but you can't just go back to a place and be like, hey, remember this? We're doing that.
Clearly, some people need to. And I'm not saying that derisively, a word that I used before.
Careful.
But,
careful.
Not me. Not me. Yeah. Always forward, I say. Always forward.
Yeah, like I sometimes go back and ride my bicycle with training wheels on it.
Just
and
to
it's
get
fun.
Feel for it again. It's fun.
Exactly. Just be like, I remember this. I'm perfectly safe.
Ghost Gage, number one from Image Comics, written by Nick Dragota and Caleb Golner, art by Nick Dragota. This is the artist of East of West doing a wild anime manga-style story about a being robot, not totally clear, that's thrust inside a massive facility, has to fight his way to the top. Again, Pete, you love this one. Talk about what you liked about this.
Yeah, this is just... really,
you were
really fun.
You were going to say bananas good, and then you stopped yourself.
I did not. I was not. No, I was not.
Bananas good.
No, this is just like
plantains good.
Fun, over the top kind of anime, like characters, action. The black and white is great. It's got such a cool feeling tone. It's very imaginative. It's very like, fuck you, big corporations. This is great. This is very cool, and like you can kind of relate to the character who's kind of thrust in here as the IT tech support, and it's just super tripped out in all the right ways. This is just absolutely fantastic. I mean, this is just quality art and comics meeting in this wonderful place, and wow, this is good.
I'm a big fan of East of West, the comic that Nick Dragota drew that Jonathan Hickman wrote. And so this was fun. It's a very similar art style, which was cool. And
but it's also different.
It's also different. It's much less dense, I feel like. It's a little bit more like, here are these characters go. You don't quite know what's happening for some of it, but you know that your main character and is fighting a bunch of different people that are expertly drawn. I feel like the little floating ghosts remind me of Clippy from Microsoft Word.
Oh, how dare you, man. That ghost was not as annoying as Clippy is.
Clippy is an icon.
Clippy's helpful.
Yeah,
Clippy is not. Either of those things.
Why, he's fixing your words.
Yeah.
Pete. Looks like you're trying to write a document, Pete. Go fuck yourself, Clippy.
Another this book was spelling really good. Mistake, Pete. Try
Pete,
again.
This document's bananas good.
Diary is a hard word to spell. You want me to just drop it in? No. Let Clippy help you.
Ghost Gage is really good. This is a creative, fun comic book that is pretty much nonstop fights.
Yeah!
Moving on to The Human Target, number 6 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Greg Smallwood. In this issue, a lot of things that have been simmering below the surface come onto the surface here as the relationship between Ice and the Human Target heats up about halfway through his life expectancy, leading to a shocking ending here that I could not believe and the entire time thought was not real. Maybe we'll get into spoilers, so if you don't want to know, don't listen. But what'd you guys think about this one?
Well, here's what I will non-spoilery talk about it. First off, this is one of the best books on the stands. It's beautifully drawn. It's just a great sort of crime story. The romance between the Human Target and Ice is so great. It's dangerous. It's sexy. It's exciting. I love it. And then the death happens, the murder happens here. And what I love about it is it raises the stakes for the whole story. Reading the story up until this point, you're like, oh, he's going to find his way out of this. He's going to survive this poison. Because, of course, he is. He's the hero. But with this death, I think we've deviated from continuity. And it makes it like, oh, wait, he might not make it out of here alive. And it just raises the stakes on the whole story in such an awesome way.
Pete?
Yeah, I think this, it continues to be amazing. The art's unbelievable. I mean, I was very excited about what happened and how it went down. I've wanted to do that to that character for a long time. So I thought it was really badass and a great example of what fun you can have with a Black Label type comic.
This is really good stuff. Definitely check it out. Next up, Count Crawley, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by David Dalmachian, art by Lucas Kettner. This is, I believe, picking up on a previous comic that David Dalmachian did. I believe we talked about on the show, if I remember correctly, about a old-timey horror show host who ends up fighting evil in his spare time. Here, I believe his granddaughter is picking up on it and also fighting evil and trying to stop vampires and werewolves and other things. So it's a little bit goofy. It's a little bit intense. What do you guys think about this first issue?
Yeah, we kind of get a Tales from the Crypt kind of intro thing. That's a lot of fun. This is unbelievable art. Really badass. Love all the kind of fighting and action. This was great. I love this. This was a great package.
This reminds me of like a lost 90s show that would air on like CBS After Dark. Was that what it was? Or CBS? USA Up All Night? Anybody watch Johnny Bago?
It sounds vaguely familiar.
Anyway, there used to be this sort of block of entertainment. They were like,
Are you thinking of Silk Stockings?
Silk Stockings, I think, was part of this whole oeuvre of programming.
Red Shoe Diaries?
What the fuck?
Not pornography. This is right at the edge. There was like main network television versions of that. Johnny Bago was a guy who caused trouble and drove around in a Winnebago. It's out there. But what I'm saying is, like, this feels like something
that is...
Was
his name naturally Johnny Bago, or did he take it after the Winnebago?
That's a great question. Honestly, I don't remember a lot of the intense backstory to this, like, fairly stupid hour-long show.
Yeah, a little too much of the pornography.
This is not a pornographic television. Okay. I'm looking.
If it was
this
on the same block as Silk Stockings and Red Shoe Diaries. I think something else is going on there.
Hold on, I'm looking up Johnny Bago. Anyway, this book feels like that. I'm looking up Johnny Bago. It feels like that type of pilot for a show. It does all the work. We set up sort of all the creepy backstory. It has that sort of 90s feel. Johnny Bago aired on CBS from June 25th, 1993 to July 30th, 1993.
So, it's so surprising that we don't remember that.
I didn't get the reference.
How did I see this?
Yeah, exactly.
How did I see this?
It was on for 15 seconds, and it made a huge impression in your life.
Wow. You know who was an EP on it? Robert Zemeckis.
Oh, okay.
So don't you dare... I can't believe I know what this is.
After Johnny Bago felt, he started working on The Polar Express.
Oh, boy.
Directed. The pilot was directed by Robert Zemeckis. Imagine that.
This is great.
Not a single team
of Count Crawley. Do you know what I'm doing right now? Enjoying this review.
This is a positive review. I guess I thought Johnny Bago was a little bit more ubiquitous than it actually is. It aired for 1 month
in 1993.
If you could
stop talking about Johnny Bago and talk about the book a little bit, I'd be more happy.
Yeah. I like this book. I was trying to draw a nice analogy, and I guess all I can say is go Johnny Bago. That was his catchphrase.
We should do a Johnny Bago podcast that's slightly related to this. Let's move on and talk about Venom Lethal Protector number one from Marvel, written by David Michelinie, art by Ivan Fiorello. I'll turn this also over to Pete.
This is great. This is just a, classic, over-the-top, fun Venom book. Where he's kind of a little bit like Hulk and misunderstood, and then is doing gross, hilarious stuff. I love this. The whole humbug thing was hysterical. This was, I think, like a classic great Venom book. This was
bananas. Justin, what did you say? Did you finish that sentence?
I said bananas good.
Oh, you're sad about using your fantastic catchphrase. Yep. I feel like this book came out of the fact that there's a semi-popular Venom movie that is still like airing, that you can maybe watch on a device in your very own home tonight, even. And the Venom stories in main Marvel comics are wildly different than anything happening. And this feels like it's much more over the plate for the Venom movies, and does feel, they do a good job of making this feel like a classic 90s comic.
Yeah.
Agreed. Next up, Armor Clads, number one from Valiant, written by J.J. O'Connor and Brian Buccellato, art by Manuel Garcia. In this takes place in the far space of the Valiant universe as a bunch of miners fight a alien infestation. Might remind you a little bit of a movie that I'm thinking of called...
Could be two movies.
Yeah.
Could be a bunch of movies.
Alien.
Starship Troopers.
Oh, Starship Troopers, also that. But that's going on there. I'll tell you what, though, big thing for me off of this book was like, oh, yeah, Valiant. I forgot about that. It felt like they've gone away for a big chunk of time, and as they plug at the end of this book, they're trying to come back in a big way with rebooting a lot of their classic titles once again. So I'm excited to see that. I'm always rooting for them. But how'd you feel about this as a new number one? Did this work?
The Arbinger title, I think, we've really been lucky. So it feels like they are making a nice stab here. This one does feel a little, it feels far away from the rest of the Valiant universe. It's sort of like carving out something totally new, which is fine. But I guess I got a little caught up in the references that we were making about Alien and Starship Troopers. It felt like a real homage combination of those two movies.
Yeah, I mean, I like the kind of this kind of classic story set up here. It's a great number one as far as like kind of we understand what's going on, kind of waiting for kind of things to get kind of bigger and but as far as like number one goes, it's setting up this world, getting you excited for what's to come. I think it does a good job.
Can I throw out a really, really stupid comment to you guys? So
as usual, yes.
Here we go. So everybody in this comic book, we're introduced to a bunch of different characters. They all have the same armor, which logically makes sense. There would be no reason for everybody to have different armor if they're all working as miners. But yeah, there's something very simple about like, oh, that's Sam. He has the drill. And this is Jessica, and she has the saw, that I felt like was kind of missing here in this book, just in terms of differentiating the characters. So then,
that's Alex. He has the podcasting equipment.
Exactly.
That's Pete. He just has bumper stickers on his bare skin.
And covered in bananas, just standing on a pile of bananas. So I was missing that a little bit, but otherwise I thought the art was solid. It was good. I am curious to see the Archer and Armstrong book that's coming out and other things. So hopefully Valiant's making it back. Action Comics number 1041 from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, Sean Aldridge, art by Dale Eaglesham and Will Conrad and Adrian Mello. This is showing what's been going on with Midnighter while everybody else has been imprisoned on Mongol's war world. And in the backup story, we got Martian Manhunter fighting, I think, the Court of Owls, but maybe it's not the Court of Owls.
It's
just some people wearing very similar masks. Yeah. So that stuff is going on. First of all, Dale Eaglesham on this sort of book, killer. Love it.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
I think this issue really affirms what a great choice Midnighter is to be the sort of other hero. I feel like it could have very easily have been Batman. And Midnighter is such a more interesting choice and a better fit here. I love the backup cover of all the four Supermen from the Death of Superman and sort of the way that spins into the legend building and discussion that these characters are having on the war world.
This is intense. I love this. I kind of like this whole war world thing. I love the kind of reveal of Superman in this issue. And then Midnighter kind of being like blue. Like, I just think this is really badass and very enjoyable. And Philip Kennedy Johnson is killing it right now with this. And the backup kind of reminds me of that. Oh my God, why am I blanking? Al Ewing kind of Hulk run, kind of gruesomeness a little bit. Tight package.
All right, next up, Stranger Things Kanchatka, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Michael Morsi, art by Todor Hristov. This is not teeing up what's been going on with Hopper in Russia, but it is showing a little bit of the world in Russia and the lab out there tying into the world of Stranger Things. Here, a scientist is presented with a Demogorgon, seems to refuse to work with the Demogorgon to help Russia bring through perhaps more of them, and two kids get worked in. I know we've talked around a lot of these Stranger Things books. I think this is one of the best ones, and I think, honestly, this almost did a better job of fleshing out the mythology of the world of Stranger Things than the show Stranger Things does.
What?
I felt the same way. Like, reading this, I was like, yes, this is the kind of book that I want to see building out the Stranger Things universe, as opposed to other side quests with the kids that we know sort of aren't going to play into the series. This book, I'm like, yes, this is actually deepening some of the story, creating a new set of characters that are having their own battle against the Demogorgon. Like, I really like this. Good art. And I'm so glad they didn't go into any Russian backstory for what's his name, the cop.
I agree with you guys that this is an amazing book. I'm not going to say something like it's better than Stranger Things, but like, I had such a blast with this, and I felt like they did such a great job of setting up the world, explaining what's going on, and like it really, we got a lot in this issue, and I felt like I understood what was going on, even though it was so intense. The art's fantastic. This is some great storytelling. A must pick up if you love Stranger Things. This is cool.
This is banana waffles good. Yeah. Detective Comics number 1058 from DC Comics, written by Mariko Tamaki and Matthew Rosenberg, art by Amon K. of Hulpen and Fernando Blanco. In the front story, we are wrapping up the tale of a attacked Arkham Tower and kicking things off into the next phase, as well as teeing up the next mystery that Batman is going to follow in the title. And the backstory is wrapping up the story of this kid
who's
grown up throughout the entire history of Gotham in absolutely tragic manner. I think we've been loving both of these stories. What did we think about the final chapters?
This is just unbelievable. I mean, the backup story almost became better than the main story, but the main story was just so good. You want to talk about a total package. This is unbelievable. This has been such a great ride. This heartbreaking kind of story of a kid growing up in Gotham and how that affects him. This was so amazing. I am so impressed with both these stories. This has been such a great great comic to kind of pick up, and great place to kind of jump in with Batman and everything that's going on.
I feel like both of these stories have been some of the most reliable, good comic storytelling coming out. And especially the fact that they're doing it on a weekly basis is so great. And I wish this was just continuing on, like more and more of this. Because I think the main story, like I sort of said this last time, where we built up Batman on his arrival, and here we get these huge page splash pages with the fight. This is one of the best spoiler storylines we've had in a long time, so really enjoyed the front story. And the backstory answered that question about like what's it like to really grow up under with Batman and Joker and all the supervillains sort of doing their thing in Gotham, and it's about as depressing as you might expect, but really great,
but so well done though.
Yeah.
Great, great story. I would say that I liked how the backup story wrapped up better than the front story. The front story, just this issue, felt a little quick to me. Like, I felt like there needed to be one more issue going on here. I was surprised how quickly and neatly it wrapped up. But at the same time, like you guys are saying, This has been a phenomenal run. Very excited to see what happens next in this title. Next up, Bolero, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Wyatt Kennedy, art by Luana Vecchio. In this issue, we're continuing to follow our main character who has been jumping through different lives. She has finally found an alternate universe life that she absolutely loves before, spoiler here, I guess, but she kind of messes it up. There's a big, big twist at the end of this issue that personally I did not see coming, but I really love the character studies that are going on in this book. They continue to go in very deep and very interesting and very true and often very messy ways that I appreciate.
This is one of those rare books that really uses the premise as a way of exploring the characters, as opposed to the vice versa of that, of using the characters to explore premise. And I really enjoyed it. I think the art's great. And it feels like this issue really crystallized that it's a metaphor for, like, dating and relationships. A great, like, science fiction, multiversal metaphor for that, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, it's very creative, enjoyable, continues to be an impressive book.
And you love the nudity, right, Pete? You love the nudity and the sex?
I was trying to be above, you know, your pervy picks here, but if you're going to fucking do it, then let's do it. All right? I mean, it's using artistic nudity, but still a little too pervy for my taste, but, you know,
it's,
people
it's
like
the
Zelda.
Let's just say
like,
it's the sort of comic book that would be on the same block as Johnny Bago, right?
Johnny Bago is not. It's a comedy. Robert Zemeckis, Mr. Clean.
I mean, you're the one who said it was paired with silk stockings, but whatever.
I did.
Aquaman.
Honestly, I think what happened is they didn't. No one liked it, so they buried it at like 11:30 or 12:30 on a Thursday night, which
USA
is when I was.
And also, Salvin, you were the one who brought up silk stockings. Justin did not.
Okay, continuity expert.
What are you, a cop? Come on,
Christ,
softcore cop.
I couldn't help but notice you mentioned you were the one that mentioned silk stockings, dude. Aquaman number 2 from DC Comics, written by Chuck Brown and Brandon Thomas, art by Sammy Basri. In this issue, we're picking up on the big cliffhanger from the end of the last issue that turns out Aquaman, the original Aquaman, Arthur Curry, is teaming up with his arch enemy, Black Manta, and the new Aquaman is not a big fan of that. Things go down in this issue. We get a lot of big stuff happening. What'd you guys feel about it?
I thought this was awesome. I love the kind of like the new Aquaman kind of loosen his cool a little bit. I love this kind of like building up a steam and momentum that the story is doing. The art's really solid, classic kind of DC feel. And I love the fact that Aquaman and Black Manta are teaming up for once. And I like this new direction that they're going in this book. This is very exciting, and I think they're doing it really well.
Like a lot of the DC legacy heroes, it's a little convoluted. Like with this, we have Aquaman. We have also Aquaman. We have Garth, who used to be Aqualad, and he's sort of a magician. We got Orm down here. It's a little bit hard to sift through. But I do think this issue, I really like the new Aquaman. I think he is like brash and angry in a way. He almost reminds me of Namor a little bit. Sure. The Submariner.
Yeah, we know who you're talking about.
You know, from Marvel Comics.
Not familiar. You lost the publisher. Me. You had me for a bit.
I think they also publish Patch, the Patch comic, number 1.
Oh, great. I need to get that for my computer. It's been really buggy lately.
Anyway, I like this new character. I like that he is a little bit reckless, a little bit angrier.
Agreed. Next up, The Department of Truth, number 17 from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Jorge Fornes. In this issue, we're flashing back in time and showing what happened with the beginnings of the Department of Truth, and specifically what happened during the Nixon presidency that changed everything. I'll tell you what, this was my favorite issue of the Department of Truth in a good long while, and I think that's down to not just Jorge Fornes's incredible art in this issue, but also James Tynion writing towards Jorge Fornes's art and the spareness of it that I thought was awesome. Loved it.
Well, what's interesting is, like, we're 17 issues deep, and then we're finally kind of getting the explanation of the Department of Truth and what's going on. I feel like if we would have had this maybe a little, or, I mean, the writing on this is phenomenal, and this is such a creative book, but, like, just somebody sitting down and kind of explaining this a little bit really felt great, and it was like, I don't know, I wanted it a little sooner. But yeah, this continues to be such a creative, fantastic book.
I love this book. And I think, Alex, I think what you're responding to here is it is a little bit of a cleaner story and a cleaner art style. So it makes for just like a more understandable story, especially just like a lot of the setting up that was happening. I feel like this book is always like reestablishing its premise because it's sort of a big idea. So they have to keep using these sort of more specific ways that it was built up. And this was, I think, the most clear version of it.
Yeah, I think that definitely gets towards it. But as always, this title is very, very good. Next up, Black Hammer Reborn, number 10, from Dark Horse Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Caitlin Yarsky. This issue, after the big revelation that our villain is the original Black Hammer, or at least one from an alternate universe. Here we get a bunch of big fight scenes, things going down, and a great cliffhanger here that brings in some other characters from the Black Hammer universe. Man, this series is so good, and it just goes for it.
Yeah, I'm...
I agree.
I'm constantly impressed by this book, and I agree. Like, sometimes you just gotta punch your dad with a hammer, you know what I mean? Dads are the worst. They don't.
I wouldn't recommend that.
It seems like that's what they're saying in this book is, and you both love it. So you're definitely saying it's okay to do that.
Real quick, this is totally unrelated, but I just took the last soundbite that you said, Pete, and I sent it to the police just in case.
You know, your friends, the police, since you're a cop.
Good friends.
No, let's not. Friends. Let's be cool.
Let's be cool. I like this a lot too. It feels like it reminds me of when I was a kid and just creating a bunch of characters on my own, having in more touch with hammers in general. MC Hammer.
Great. I guess we're not talking about that book. Clear number 5.
He's going to say more.
Clear number 5 from Comixology Originals, written once again by Scott Snyder, art by Francis Manapul.
This guy's out there.
This takes place in a world that's been taken over, as far as I understand it, by some sort of virtual reality utopia. Of course, it's not all that it's cracked up to be. The real hero of this book for me is Francis Manapul's art, which is absolutely gorgeous. Love the stuff. Just love looking at it throughout as the various characters walk through these landscapes. What about you guys?
Yeah, I agree with you. This story has been it feels like it's one of those stories that's constantly explaining itself again, like what a veil is, what it does, why one veil is good, is bad for most people, but many veils is good, or the plan is like switching that sort of expectation there. But I do like the world that's been built here, especially because of the art, like you said.
I mean, the art is absolutely gorgeous. So great. But we shouldn't take away from Scott's writing. This is such a creative, cool world. Loved the kind of way, the different ways that we kind of saw this character, like as a spider in different kind of panels and through different shots that bled into different panels. It's just such creative, amazing stuff. As far as like we read a lot of comics, but the way this was kind of like all just set up and unfolds, it's such a great kind of example of how you can kind of lead with story and we will follow. It's so weird and different and cool. I was very impressed with it.
My bad. Number
yes,
5. That's
oh,
yes.
Okay. Oh, sorry,
no, that's
sorry,
name
sorry,
of the
sorry,
comic
sorry.
Book from Ahoy Comics.
My mistake. I've been waiting for that apology for a long time.
Written by Mark Russell and Bryce Ingham, art by Peter Krause and Joe Orsak. Now, this book is a satirical look at superhero comics, and in this issue, the chandelier finally makes good on the tease from the first issue where he was sent a salad shooter. I believe it's a salad shooter, right?
Yeah,
by his arch enemy. We get the reveal of why that was sent in this issue, but this is just so much fun, so goofy. Mark Russell is so good with the satire. Peter Krause's art is great. I just had a blast reading this book. I'm sad it's over, but it was such a fun five issues. What did you guys think?
Also, the really fun backup stuff with all the old kind of like order the toy kind of stuff, the magic hole. Send a dollar to anywhere but here toys. I are just like really hilarious, very creative. The Dying Inside book. It's worth it alone just for the fun, kind of cool stuff in the back. But
yeah,
the comic is very creative, unbelievably done. It's a fantastic package.
I feel like Ahoy Comics does a great job of really fleshing out their worlds and like building in all this extra back matter that is really interesting and helps to really make it feel like you're getting so much for what you're paying for. And as for the main story, like, I like this as well. And I actually thought it is great satire, great comedy, but it's also like a good scam. The chandelier got duped.
It was a great scam. That was a great scam. Reveal at the end there. Very fun. Last one we're going to talk about is The Adventure Zone. Here There Be Gerblins from First Second, written by Clint McElroy and Carrie Petch, art by Carrie Petch. This is requested by C-Sash, as mentioned on iTunes. Thank you, C-Sash, for recommending it. Now, this is based on the podcast by the McElroys. Pretty weird that it wasn't something based on our podcast, but I guess we'll let it slide. That said, this is a classic D&D style adventure that a bunch of folks are going on. What do you guys think about this book?
Well, I really thought it was a fun way to kind of break the fourth wall with this kind of DM character doing that. And I thought, like, we've seen a bunch of kind of like, all right, we're going to kind of bring this D&D board game to life, but the art's fantastic and it's quirky and fun enough, so it brings some originality to it. I thought it was enjoyable.
Yeah, I feel like the real innovation here is that turning to the dungeon master throughout the book and being able to, all the comedy, and like, I don't listen to The Adventure Zone, but you still pick up the story, you get the world you're in. But the fun to be had is really turning outward in a Parker Lewis Can't Lose, also a television show from the 90s, style way that lets you, or Zach Morris calling timeouts in early seasons of Saved by the Bell.
I'm not familiar with the Saved by the Bell thing, but I do know Parker Lewis. That was paired with Red Shoe Diaries, right?
We're reviewing next week Red Shoe Diaries number one, written by Alex Zalman, drawn by photos Alex Zalman took.
I gotta confess something here, because I think this was good. The art was fun. I agree with you on the DM thing. I think that was a very, very fun device throw in here, but there's this weird, maybe weird is the wrong word. There is this subgenre of comic books now that are based on podcasts where people play D&D, and it is just not my thing. Like, I already kind of can't get into, like, there's already a block for me a little bit with D&D, and that's probably where it comes from. But then I probably wouldn't listen to a podcast about D&D, and then to read a comic book about a podcast about D&D is just too many steps removed. This is not a valid criticism, mind you. I'm very well aware of that, because if you already like the podcast, if you already like D&D, I think this is probably perfectly within your wheelhouse, and you're going to have a great time reading this book, and it's going to be super fun. But given that there's this, there's also a Critical Role, there's at least one other one that I'm not thinking of. Vox Machina is the same thing as Critical Role, right?
Oh, is it? I thought it was different.
So. Yeah, I don't know. There's at least one other one as well. Oh, there was the space one as well, the one that Felicia Day is on that I'm blanking the name of. But it is this subgenre, and they feel like kind of shaggy to me is the problem, which, mind you, we have talked about Bananas Good over the course of our podcast, so it's fine, and I know my criticism holds no water. But that's the main thing that, like, removes me a little bit for this book. But otherwise, for what it is, I think it was very well created.
Well, let me say, and what I think it is, is it's a little, they're a little winky. They're inherently mm-hmm. like, look, we made this for you, the fans. Mm-hmm. It's not about necessarily reaching out to a larger audience. I'm sure that's partially the goal. But it's really made for people who are already consuming the content on the podcast. So it's very much like, look, we're doing the thing. Hey, look at this other thing that we do that we you might not notice, but it's sort of an Easter egg. It's like if we had a comic and we talked about Johnny Bago a bunch, people would be like, a new reader or new listener would be like, what the fuck are these guys talking about?
Yeah.
But the true fans would be like, they're doing the Johnny Bago thing.
Exactly. Classic Johnny Bago bit. Well, my main impression, and I'll throw that out here, this is just if anybody else does read this and are like, I don't quite get this, this isn't quite for me. The entire time I was kind of like, I wish I was reading Skull Kickers, which is this book by Jim Zub,
great
which
comic.
Is also like playing off of D&D conventions, but so fun, gets like very dark at points and very deep with the characters that I really enjoy. So not to recommend something off of this review we're doing, but that was definitely my impression here. I was like, of this thing, of D&D things, we've talked about Jim Zub's other D&D stuff too, which is also really good. Like, I think he is a writer, and this is not to slag off these writers, because again, I think they do a perfectly fine job here, but he is a writer who really gets to do what you're talking about, Justin, which is take a D&D thing that does not work for everybody and make it work for a general audience. So if you do like this, that might be a great jumping off point for something else you could read. If you didn't like this, maybe you want to check that out. I don't know.
But while we're talking about criticism, I think it's important to talk about, like, you know, if we do get someone writing into iTunes and they recommend something we don't want to read, do we still have to read that? You know what
yes.
I mean? And it's just
the
one
answer
of those
is
things,
yes.
Yes.
Like,
the
what
answer
are we doing?
Just as clearly
why?
Yes. Totally unrelated. Next week on the podcast, we'll be reviewing Spider-Man Raid, which was
well,
another
Spider-Man Raid.
Maybe
Spider-Man
we don't
Raid.
All read it if we don't. You know what I mean? Like maybe
Spider-Raid. Spider-Raid.
If we didn't like
the,
it the first
the
time, why would we go back around
I checked the
to
weather
read it
forecast,
again.
And next week is calling for rain, Pete.
I don't want to read it again.
It's a really nice tie-in to the fact that we're literally going to have a spider raid here on the East Coast. So there you go.
Yeah, it's true. That's a great point, Alex. We're tying
Thank
in.
You.
It's topical. It's topical comic news.
Doesn't make me want to read news. It. Just because somebody says something nice, which is very appreciated, doesn't mean that we then have to revisit something for our
Here's
past.
The thing.
That
we're like genies. Somebody says something nice on iTunes, we're trapped, man. We're
exactly.
trapped.
Exactly. How about this, Pete? Why don't we just record your review now? You can say it's bananas good and the art was the tight package.
I'm not going to say
Justin,
that if I
can
don't
say
mean
it.
It
reminds you of Johnny Bago.
Well, we got plenty of that. I think I said that for every comic this week.
C-Sash, really, thank you for recommending this comic. We appreciate it. Sorry if we went far afield. And again, if any of you want to recommend a comic, just drop a ratings and a comment over on iTunes. If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube coming out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Go, Johnny Bago!